Yeah, wiping your
crybaby eyes.
Yeah, right. Of course, if Lucic did that, he'd scratch his cornea because he's got a Stanley Cup ring that would get in the way.
Wow, what a line, huh? Jack Edwards, ladies and gentlemen, from NESN, TV voice of the Bruins. Jack, how you doing, bud?
Terrific. How are you, Glenn?
Hi, Kirk. Hi, Jack. How are you?
Got your best buddy, Kirk, here.
Yeah, it's all right. What's up?
So, in other words, you'll tolerate the next 10 or 12 minutes.
Everybody has to do it, Jack. I'm sorry.
You know what? You know what? Nasty is good at this time of year. So
yes, it is. Well, you know what? That was a good part of last night's game, didn't you think? We talked about them getting more physical. I thought they got a lot more physical last night.
Yeah, they did get more physical, and they showed some creativity in getting the puck to the front, and they got guys there when they needed to, and they exposed Braden Holtby as a pretty good AHL goalie, which is what he is right now, but he certainly isn't a top-flight National Hockey League goalie. I think perhaps the most compelling dynamic of last night's game is that if you look at all three games, the Bruins have been getting better, and Washington has not been getting better. Washington came out in really lockdown mode in game one, and the Bruins really didn't know how to bust into that hardened bunker, if you will. But the Bruins have been figuring that out, and they have been getting more and more physical. And I believe that the lack of discipline shown by Washington, and right at this moment, Nicholas Backstrom is supposed to be in a hearing with Brendan Shanahan.
Correct.
The lack of discipline shown by Washington in the closing minutes may be an indication that they're starting to crack under the pressure that the Bruins are bringing to bear.
Well, that was stupid. Getting back to Holtby, how much of it do you think the first two games he was well protected with a number of block shots? Last night, they got through. They didn't have those block shots last night.
That's true. They didn't have the block shots last night, and that's because the Bruins were a little bit more creative in the neutral zone. They were getting into the attacking zone with speed. There were a lot more lanes. And also Washington, maybe because it was playing at home, decided that it wouldn't pack it in quite as tight to its goal as it did in games one and games two. Games one and two, I should say. Holtby is a good goalie. He has a chance to be really good in his NHL career, but he's not there yet. And when it comes time to make the huge saves, for instance, Tim Thomas with 2:21 to go, robbing Jay Beagle point blank, and saying after the game, I actually saw that coming. And, when Thomas is in that mode, that's what a goalie's got to do. It's not about the three goals that Thomas gave up. It's about that one that he stopped right there.
Jack, I think there's something that you and I are going to agree upon, as usual. I think that Dale Hunter, I mean, how delusional can you be here when he's talking about Backstrom and Bruins targeting his head is crossing the line? I mean, you think about Pierre Turgeon, you think about all this stuff. I understand Hunter's the coach, but I mean, can we be realistic about this?
Inevitably, teams reflect the personalities of their head coaches. It happens in every single sport, and there's really no way around it. When you're in professional sports and you're living together, in essence, every single day for 6, 8, 9 months at a time, somebody's tendencies tend to wear off on you. And Nicholas Backstrom has never done what he did, but he cross-checked Peverly right across the face, and you got to suspend that. And everybody's expecting him to get suspended for it. Hunter was one of the dirtiest players in NHL history. He was also one of those rare guys who was a very skilled, very dirty player.
Yeah.
So that kind of masked his dirtiness, but that's like saying, well, yeah, he was an assassin, but he was a really good shot.
All right, Jack, what do you think's going on here in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year? Usually when you get to the postseason, the hitting increases, the fighting decreases. We're not seeing that. You look at this Philadelphia and Pittsburgh series, and it is just outright vicious. What is happening here this year?
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
It is a beautiful thing.
I mean, this is actually the danger of Gary Bettman's suggested realignment of the National Hockey League, where he would turn it into four divisions, and the stuff in your division is important. You play more games against your division rivals than anybody else, but the rest of the league becomes generic. Therefore, the Bruins would play the Philadelphia Flyers just as often as they play the Colorado Avalanche and the Anaheim Ducks. Well, the heck with that. The NHL has 40 years of equity in the bitterness that is built up between regional rivals, even those that are not in your own division, such as the Montreal Canadiens or the Buffalo Sabres, who the Bruins see all the time. if you go away from that, you give up the opportunity to have this kind of familiarity breeds contempt, nastiness in the first round of playoffs here. That is what makes it go. Let's face it. You know, almost all of us who watch hockey love the confrontational aspect of it. And when you get teams like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh who know each other inside out, who play each other six times every regular season, and then every couple of years or so they end up playing each other in the playoffs, that's just wonderful when guys bring up the old laundry and you know, and they remember what's been going on for 3 or 4 years head-to-head. And, you know, Max Talbot's seen both sides of it now. And somebody in the Pittsburgh organization said to me a couple of weeks ago, the reason that Philadelphia scares me is not because I think that Philadelphia is a better team. I think that Talbot is going to be the guy that injects the serum of how to win into that team and use it against us.
Well,
I don't know if Talbot's the reason, but it's working out okay for the Flyers, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was a little concerned that Brizgalov was playing better and was a good acquisition for them this year. But in this playoff series, they're scoring at will. I love it. I can't shut that series off. On the other hand, I do think it's going to bring up that debate once again, as you know, that happens on a regular basis. Because this is more like regular season. It's not like the playoffs, the way they're playing. And you're seeing some carryover in these other series, Jack. I wonder if the players are looking at it saying, well, they do it in that series. Why can't we do it in our series?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the slippery slope on which Brendan Shanahan has pitched his tent. And that's a difficult thing for him because he's got to try to take individual situations, every single one of them an individual situation, and apply broad guidelines across his rulings that are going to be interpreted in all kinds of different ways across the league. You know, when you get a situation like Chicago's Andrew Shaw, who ran Mike Smith in Phoenix, the goalie, and getting 3 games for that, well, you know, everybody now understands that pretty clearly, that if you hunt a goalie and you put your shoulder into his chin behind his own goal while he's handling the puck, that you're going to get 3 games. The more difficult stuff is, for instance, you know, the Shea Weber thing, because what a lot of people overlooked was that Henrik Zetterberg ran Weber, and we made mention of that last night, that Ovechkin at the end of the game ran Rich Peverley. You know, there's 1 second to go in the game. The puck's 200 feet from where Washington needs it to be, and Ovechkin, instead of going in and trying to pry the puck out of his skates, just, you know, he didn't clobber him, but he hit him pretty hard above the waist. Totally unnecessary to do that kind of thing. So Shanahan's in a tough spot. But you know what? I still have no problems with the overall body of work of Brendan Shanahan. I'm not worried about people saying it's like regular season hockey because it's so intense. And the people who pay attention, the real hockey fans, know that it's up a couple of notches and it's just going to get ratcheted higher.
I think you got to suspend Backstrom just because he's so dumb, Jack, in that spot. Like you said, I mean, the game is over. There's absolutely no call for it. You can debate whether or not it's a suspendable hit. That's fine. I think it probably was. But to do it in that spot when the game's over, suspend him just for that.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that was just so ill-advised. And it was actually Dale Hunter-like, you know, as Flynn was pointing out. It was the kind of thing that you would see from Hunter during his playing career. And from a guy who is as talented and necessary as Nicklas Backstrom. And by the way, you know, if Washington drops Game 4 at home, they're coming back to Boston down 1-3. Not exactly the scenario they would spell out for themselves, but Backstrom may have put his team in that kind of position by doing something just flat-out stupid.
Was Brad Marchand, was he trying to lure a couple of possible penalties? Now, he got a stick in the groin, I know that. And that was pretty obvious. I think that one, if you were nearby, he was probably talking and singing soprano. So that one seemed to be legit. But this seemed to be a case where he was trying to see if he could buy a couple calls. Fair to say?
Yeah. Yep, it is fair to say. I didn't like the way he exaggerated the last time he went down. I can't remember the exact instance of it, but I remember saying that it looked exaggerated. Marchand is a tough player, and he is a guy who's not afraid to go into any situation. But the referees know that as well, and he doesn't need to embellish anything. He earns the number of power plays that he puts the Bruins on by his toughness, his aggression, and his willingness to get his nose dirty and or broken. I don't like the embellishment even a little bit. I think it detracts from the way the Bruins play, and I don't know if anybody spoke to him about it today. They didn't skate, but or if they're going to talk to him about it tomorrow. But But I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody did, because he's still earning the stuff. And what he doesn't want to do is start getting the reputation of being a diver, and then the officials will turn against him, and they'll make it be more than obvious that it's a penalty. So if he just keeps playing it straight as he has 95% of the time, things will work out.
I think one of the underappreciated players on any team in this city, I thought he was great in the postseason last year, and has been great so far in this series. Really good game last night, is Seidenberg, Jack. Yeah. I thought, once again, just another huge game in the big spot for him.
What a stud this guy is. I mean, he actually relishes these incredible collisions with Ovechkin, and they're like the executive desk toy, you know, the one with the balls there that you bang together, and they both, you know, they bang off in opposite directions. There have been at least half a dozen world-class collisions between those guys in the first three games, and Seidenberg comes away smiling, going, yeah, this is really fun. Fun? Are you nuts, man? But you're right, Kirk. He's a tremendously talented player. I think he's got the best feet in the National Hockey League. If you look at the number of times that Seidenberg plays the puck in a perfect way, technically, with his skates to make a play out of something that really could backfire, and actually his defensive pair, Zdeno Chara, often has trouble with those kinds of things. Seidenberg is as good as they get. And Claude Julien this morning said that, you ought to rank him right there with Chara. It's hard to separate the two in a clutch playoff situation. And everybody knows Chara's value to the Bruins, but Julien puts him right there with Big Z.
Since they don't play again until Thursday, how quickly do we find out about Backstrom?
I think we're going to find out tonight or very early tomorrow.
Okay.
Shanahan usually doesn't wait that long after hearing the player's side of it. He usually renders the decision, and Shanahan's got a pretty busy agenda. I don't think he wants to get too much of a backlog here. You know, James Neal is in for two hearings, so that's the way it's gone this spring. But, you know, let's dial it back to a couple of years ago when Colin Campbell, who's a wonderful guy, was just in way over his head and was getting swamped by these kinds of things. These hearings would happen kind of in a black box, and then word would leak out through some of the Canadian media contacts that Campbell had over the years. And then you'd find out the truth from the league in a one- or two-paragraph release that had so much gray area you wouldn't really understand it. It's not a perfect map from Brendan Shanahan, but he's doing it quickly, he's doing it transparently, and he's trying to provide some kind of a guideline for players' conduct during these playoff games. And, nobody wants his job, but I think he's doing a pretty good job of it.
All right, Jack, always great talking to you. We'll talk to you soon, bud.
But thanks, guys. Game 4 on Thursday night, and it's on Nesson.
You got it. All right.
Thanks.
Nice that you two got along real well. I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, I'm not going to force a confrontation, Glenn. I would never do that. That's bad radio.
Some guests on the Big Show receive a gift card to Davio's Northern Italian Steakhouse, locations in Boston and at Patriot Place in Foxborough. And are you ready for this? Coming, I believe, next year? Linfield. Another location in Linfield. Davio's. We'll get right back to the phone calls, and we'll get back to this whole Red Sox situation at 617-779-0850, 888-525-0850. Plenty of room for you on the old Wiener Wine Line. We'll do that at 540 at 617-779-3535.